Today, so we don't need a quorum to gavel in, so we're going to get the show on the road because we're going to need to be finished as close to 11 as we can. It is 10:02. The House Fisheries Committee will come to order. Everybody, please remember to turn off your cell phones. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, St. Patty's Day, 2015. Members present, Representative Ortiz and Representative Christ Tompkins. And, of course, myself, Louise Stutes, as chair. We have with us Kelly Burnett from House Records and Sam Greeley from the LIO. And the ghost of Reed is here. He had to run upstairs for a minute, but he'll be right back. And he is my Fisheries Committee aide. And we have Representative Millett with us. Good morning. Today, we're going to start out with a presentation by Norm Van Bachter of Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. The presentation will be followed by the confirmation hearing for Commissioner Designee Sam Cotton. And Mr. Van Bachter, if you'd like to come forward, please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Norman Van Vactor. I'm the President and CEO of Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, and I live and reside in Dillingham, Alaska.
Please make your presentation, Mr. Van Vactor. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today and offer up some ongoing comments and concerns as it relates to the ongoing conversation of the loss of limited entry fishing licenses from our communities and regions. As I walked up here today, I walked by a coffee shop and I glanced at a sign that was in the window that basically said, "I fish here, I hope my kids and my grandkids can too." And I think that's the gist of the comments I have to offer. For such an important conversation, our time is obviously limited, and I'll be tag-teaming with a good friend and fellow community member, Mr. Robin Samuelson. Robin probably doesn't need any introduction. He happens to be the chairman of the board of Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and has served the state and our region and our community in numerous capacities. The ongoing exacerbation of the loss of ownership of our salmon resources is not a problem that is unique to Bristol Bay and just our communities, but it's certainly a pain that is suffered by most of coastal and rural Alaska. That said, we do have probably the largest sockeye salmon run in the world, and are often looked at and cited in that context more than most. In the context of permanent ownership, coastal Alaska has developed a trend that needs to be stopped in its tracks and reversed. While some of the facts and statistics that I'm going to cite to you today are specific to Bristol Bay, I know that the same trends are playing out in communities such as Kodiak, Cordova, Hoonah, Angoon, Petersburg, and others, just to name a few. I had the pleasure several months ago of serving on the Governor's Fisheries Transition Team and, in fact, chaired the group of dedicated community and industry participants. One of the five major issues that our group identified and has asked this administration to address was the goal of returning ownership of Alaska's fisheries resources to the communities of coastal Alaska. What's the need and why the importance? I'll just say a few facts. I don't think a lot of these things are certainly things that you've all heard before. But locally held permits and salmon resource fishing revenue are vital to the economic health of any of our regions. Locally held permits continue to decline, and that decline is sharp and steep. Residents lack access to capital and financing that allow entry to our fisheries. Existing programs that we have still are not meeting the needs of our residents to compete for these permits. Bristol Bay as a region specifically depends heavily on fishing as the major revenue contributor. As ownership of permits leave the region, so does the revenue they generate. I'm sure the multiplier effect really needs no explanation, but you know, $100,000 gross that a fishing vessel might make in our community really turns into several hundred thousand dollars. We have actually over time, unfortunately, also started perpetuating a negative feedback loop that further perpetuates this decline. Some of the statistics I'm going to share are a few years dated, but they're still relevant, and again, if anything, the numbers are somewhat worse, and at any time I'd be actually happy to share a lot of the details and specifics. But Bristol Bay has now lost almost 44% of all the permits that were originally issued to watershed residents. Bristol Bay residents now hold under 25% of all Bristol Bay permits. Originally, 28% of all residents held one type of fishing permit or another. Today, that number is less than 10%. How do permits leave? Our estimates are that about 62% of these permits leave due to financial transactions and specifically sales. Migration of community members to other areas accounts for approximately another 25%. The balance of roughly about 13% is largely made up of foreclosures, revocations, and forfeitures. Why do permits leave? Permits are randomly distributed based upon economic principles in place among possible potential owners. Unfortunately for us, most of these potential owners are non-residents who have greater access to capital and credit, giving them a competitive acquisition advantage. Average local permit holders in our region typically harvest about 25% less than non-residents. Higher earnings mean non-residents view permits as having a higher intrinsic economic value. Our people are not any less the best fisher people in the world. They just approach the fishery from a different social perspective, a perspective rooted in resource protection and subsistence. Sales and transfer of permits tend to rise both at the top of the fish price curve and at the bottom. Prior to joining BBDC a little over 2.5 years ago, I had spent close to 30 years working for a Seattle-based major processor. One of what I felt were one of my major accomplishments during my tenure was building what was the largest resident Alaskan fishing fleet in the industry. To cite just one community as an example, the community of Nustuyahok, I had at one time 44 fishing licenses and permits fishing for me. Today, I believe that number is closer to 8 and possibly as low as 6. Some say that turning this trend around is impossible. Accept it and move on. This for us is a completely unacceptable response and answer. 23 years ago, 98% of the Bering Sea's fisheries resource was owned and controlled by non-Alaskans living in the Pacific Northwest. Today, 6 Alaskan community development corporations, 100% owned by resident Alaskans, Alaskans of all stripes and color, own over 30% of that resource, and that ownership is growing. We did it offshore with the federal government's help. Why can't we do something nearshore? The onshore-offshore issues are obviously completely different, and our onshore coastal fisheries will require a very different solution set. I also think I'm smart enough to know that in this current environment especially, I'm not here looking for state funding or handouts, and that's not in the cards, and we don't expect it to be. Our organization, Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, has been trying to help turn the tide. For the last 7 years, we've had an active permit retention plan and program in place. We are making progress, but have a long way to go, and we need your help. We estimate that we're currently still losing approximately 15 resident permits a year. In 2014, the year just completed, we had what I'd best describe as 7 saves, our best year yet. That said, until that number is 15 or higher, we aren't even breaking even. The cause of permit losses are complex, and so are the solutions. Restoration will probably require a mix of long-term programs. With that, however, come the opportunities to restore the ownership of this tremendous economic engine to our communities. We ask, and are asked today, I guess, is that when you, our legislators, see opportunities that support the goal of returning the ownership of Alaska's coastal fisheries to coastal Alaskans, we can get your bipartisan and unilateral support. Let's bring them home. Thank you very much, and if I can answer any additional questions, I'd welcome that opportunity.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Ortiz.
Yes, sir. You say that the solutions are complex and will require a variety of different options on the table. Can you think of one particular action that you would suggest that would help the process? In other words, and I guess from the perspective of legislation, is there any particular area of legislation, legislative focus that needs to be there in order to try to get us on the right track?
Is there a silver bullet? Is there one silver bullet? No, I can't certainly point to that. A lot of us have some ideas and some dreams. I personally, again, there's a lot of ideas being floated around right now. I think it merits an ongoing conversation, a very serious conversation, whether it's a task force, whether it's a continuance of some very specific conversations that some of us are having. But, you know, we are extremely grateful to what CFEC and Limited Entry has done over time for our fisheries and our resource. And I know there's conversations as it relates to CFEC right now, and we just hope, I guess, in that regard, that those conversations are serious and take their time and go slow and methodical, and all the concerns of all parties are heard. But specifically, more back to your point, I think the conversation that includes the conversation of potentially other organizations that would potentially be monitored and run by CFEC that could potentially, well, to cut to the chase, I guess the concept that a couple of us have been using is a community permit banking idea. And again, it's in its infancy stages, and it's got a long way to go and needs to have all the details and possibilities and potential consequences thoroughly vetted and thought out, but is something that I think has some merit and needs to be pursued.
Follow up.
What can you what do you say about the existing state loan programs to assist Alaskan fishermen with, you know, getting access to permits and boats and things like that? Are those programs working effectively? Is there any changes that need to be made in those that you suggest, which might help promote this goal?
Well, to give you an example specifically, Mr. Representative, the state currently has a loan program as well as CFAB, and those programs work and really are the backbone of what we are currently doing. When I describe the seven saves that we had in 2014, that was working within that system. And specifically, what an organization like BBEDC is doing right now is we're working with qualified residents. We are assisting them with the process. We're assisting them with a significant portion of the down payment required in the form of a gift to the individuals. We are then working with them through a period of time and even, in fact, assisting them with the financial payments and specifically the interest payments every year. You know, that said, it's still a huge undertaking for any individual to step into our fishery. Currently, permits are being priced at $160,000. You know, if you wanted to get into a competitive fishing vessel, you're looking at a couple $100,000. And so it's a big jump. There's a significant barrier to entry. And this is a barrier that we're trying to help our people overcome and work with. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that still precludes us from assisting an individual, pouring a tremendous amount of money into that individual's specific operation, and then 5 or 6 years down the road, still see that permit leave the region.
Thank you.
Yes. Any further questions from this committee? And did Mr. Samuelson, would you like to come up, please? state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm from Dilling, Alaska. Let me go back about 150 years ago, and my great-great-grandfather started the first cannery in Bristol Bay. A book's been written about the gentleman. When you fly out to Bristol Bay, you fly over Lake Clark. Lake Clark's named after him. When you go to the community of Clark's Point, Clark's Point's named after him. He was the biggest trader in Bristol Bay. So my history goes back to the start of the fishery. And prior to that, I had people living in Bristol Bay that were relatives that were subsisting off the fish in Bristol Bay. I've served 3 years on the Alaska Board of Fish and 9 years on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which was a great honor representing the state of Alaska. I started fishing in a 22-foot Seymour skiff when my dad threw me off his boat when I was 14 years old. My mother said they damn near got a divorce. She didn't talk to him all summer that summer. And I was scared out of my wits, but I started fishing, and I fished that 22-foot Seymour skiff for about 5 years. My dad ran away from an orphanage when he was 13, so in his mind, he said, I needed to start earning my money at that age. He'd give my sister money, but he wouldn't give me money. So I was pretty aggressive in trying to earn money during the winter and fishing. At that time, there was very little fish because of the high seas Japanese drift fleet right outside Bristol Bay. They were corking our rivers off. In fact, it got so bad that Governor Egan notified the federal government he was going to block the rivers and kill the salmon off himself if they didn't do something. And at that time, there was a withdrawal of the high seas drift net fleet. Limited entry came into play. I got my permit as a young gentleman in the state of Alaska and helped a lot of people within the bay get a permit. And we thought it was a good program then, and it's still a good program. But I'm born and raised in Dillingham, 64 years old, and every year I see permits exiting. I've been the chairman of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, CEQ Group, since its inception, and I was the president and CEO of the organization prior to Norm. Most people I represent are subsistence people. They're Alaska Natives. They live in villages where there's 80% unemployment. Not employment, unemployment. Every dollar is very important, whether it's a permanent fund check from the state of Alaska or fishing. And when you get prices like 40 cents a pound, nobody makes money. Even the top-notch fishermen don't make money. Well, the people I represent, they can't go borrow money. And the only thing they have for sale is their native allotments and a permit, either a drift or a sit-net permit. So a lot of the sales were in desperation in Bristol Bay from local residents. You need to feed the family and keep the house warm. And there's speculators that got permits in Bristol Bay that sold them, yeah. But as Norm indicated, I see a future of the state of Alaska having a limited entry program in Bristol Bay where probably 90% of the permits are going to be non-residents, 10% residents. That was never the intent of limited entry program. We need to create sustainable economies within the communities of Bristol Bay, communities of Southeast, communities in Cook Inlet, and one of the ways to do that is we need to figure out a way to get more permits into watershed residents' hands. We're losing millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars by these folks coming up, fishing our resource, and taking that money back to their respective communities. At BBDC, as Norm indicated, we've done everything we can. The first permit sale I made at BBDC to a watershed resident was a young 20-year-old gal that met the qualifications, and she's still fishing today. But what we're doing at BBDC is not enough. And we need to take a look at the limited entry program that we currently have in place and try to figure out different avenues to get more permits into watershed residents' hands. I think the communities, the people that live in those communities in the state, it's utmost importance. You know, as we face dwindling oil prices, Representative Herron.
I'd like to acknowledge Representative Herron.
Representative Herron.
Thank you.
As oil prices dwindle, there's going to be budget cuts, and we're going to feel them extra hard out in rural Alaska. We've, in the last 20, 30 years, we've been riding a tidal wave of prosperity in this state through the oil, and what we're facing today is pretty scary to us out in rural Alaska. But this year we have 54 million sockeye salmon returning to Bristol Bay. Name me another place on this earth that's got that kind of resources. There ain't no place. That's why we don't like Pebble Mine. We don't want that mine to ruin our waters. We have a fish first policy in Bristol Bay. It's carried us through for thousands of years, and it's going to carry us through for thousands of years more. Anything that you could do, I'd say use extreme caution in dealing with limited entry. Give us ample time to respond to any proposals, if there's any drafts that are going to be changed. You know, there's 1,800 drift permits and 1,000 set net permits in Bristol Bay, and what we have left is very important, and we need to increase the ownership of permits by watershed residents. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Is there any questions by this committee? Seeing none, I want to thank you very much for your presentation. I want to thank you, Mr. Van Bachter, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Up next is Commissioner Designee Sam Cotton for his confirmation. You have Mr. Cotton's resume in the committee packet. Welcome, Commissioner Designee. We're looking forward to having a little chat with you. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sam Cotton, Commissioner of Fish and Game, Designee.
Well, tell us a little about yourself, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a little awkward. I feel like I've already appeared in front of some of you and talked about myself quite a bit already, but I've had quite an extensive hands-on experience with a lot of different types of fisheries, and I suspect many of you have as well. So I could talk about that if you had any questions about that. I've also had fairly extensive experience working with local governments and advocating on their behalf in front of fish boards and fishery council. Also have been a member of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, had spent 6 years doing that, so that gave me a lot of, again, hands-on experience with fisheries management issues. I've also had experience in this body. 40 years ago, I was a freshman legislator in this body, and that gives time period that over the last 40 years, in addition to my time with the legislature, I've had a lot of other opportunities to work in, especially in the fish and game arena. So, again, I could get more into more detail if you'd like, but I feel like I'm being a little redundant, so I'll stop there.
No, we appreciate that, and you have spoken before this committee, I believe, at least twice, so we're pretty familiar with you. I have a question. And my question would be, I know that when you're involved in all these fisheries, as you have been from the inception, not only being a fisherman, but insofar as the council and the Board of Fish and everything else that you've been involved with, I know that there's always not always, but a lot of times there's a little conflict between the different sectors. You know, the longliners think the trawlers are the bad guys, and the pot guys think the longliners are the bad guys. Do you think you have the ability to remain impartial and not kind of single out one sector over the other, so you're working for the good of all the sectors involved in the fishing?
Madam Chairman, I should hope so. I've not really been involved in any of the fisheries that are involved with the North Pacific Council, the federal fisheries. My commercial fishing experience is pretty much restricted to salmon fishing. And I fished as a purse seiner. I had a permit in Lower Cook Inlet for 25 years, so had a lot of experience there, and fished a few other places as well. And then when I worked for a local government, it was Aleutians East Borough, and they were often a center of some allocation battles between other areas, and so I ended up really getting to know a lot of the other areas pretty well. Norton Sound, Bristol Bay, the river systems, Kodiak, Chignik. So you end up getting pretty well educated on the concerns of other people, especially in regard to the AAM fishery. That's not as controversial today as it once was, but there's still, every time they come up in front of the fish board, there's usually a lot of discussion about allocation issues. So, but for the fishery I participated in, I've signed off my executive order authority to the deputy commissioner, so that, because my kids still fish there, so there won't be any concerns about not being impartial in that area. But as far as the rest of the state, I like to think I bring a balanced approach and don't feel I'd have any preconceived biases, with the only exception that I end up being fairly parochial when I'm on the North Pacific Council and voting there pro-Alaska. I think that we have to occasionally fight for just to remove some disadvantages Alaska fishermen have. So if there's any bias, it's going to be one that I'm happy to admit to.
And speaking of that, I know that I'm just going to say this kind of offhandedly, but I know that with there's a promotion to pursue more observing on the vessels in this state, and it seems to me, and I could be speaking out of turn, but it seems to me that most of the East Coast fisheries, aren't they federally funded for their observer coverage? Whereas that's not the case in Alaska, and it seems a little inequitable to me.
Yes, Madam Chairman, that's true, and we've made comments on that subject and struggled with the federal agencies on budget issues like that. But we're still doing it in the Bering Sea. Most of the observer coverage is paid for by the vessel owner. In the Gulf of Alaska, the new observer program taxes each of the fishermen that participate in the federal fisheries with a 1.25% gross tax, and then that goes into a fund that pays for the observer coverage in the Gulf of Alaska. So, yes, the fishermen pay for it.
So it's still inequitable, in other words?
In that regard, yes.
Yeah, it is. Is there any questions for any? Oh, Representative Herron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, of course, I was able to ask you a couple of questions in resources, and so I'm confident in telling everybody that I'm going to push the green button on your confirmation vote. But I'll just ask you more of a generic question. Is using the analogy that a canine is always chasing something and they never catch it, but now that you've gotten to this accomplishment of being Commissioner of Fish and Game for the state of Alaska, do you feel confident that you know what to do with it and can lead the department?
Madam Chairman, that's a pretty daunting question, Representative, and I sure hope so. I'm finding out that there are close to 1,700 people that work for the Department of Fish and Game. Most of them are accomplished professionals and scientists and biologists, and I'd be crazy if I didn't immediately admit that I've got a lot to learn from a lot of them, and I feel like we have a good professional organization in place, and I think we have a well-defined mission in the statutes and the Constitution that I understand, and I've got some ideas about how we can improve communications with the public. I'd like to diminish some of the polarization that takes place in Alaska on allocation issues, and I think open communication will help that. But I certainly feel I'm up to the task, and I hope that I can prove that that's so.
And Madam Chair, just a comment is that the Commissioner and I have had some private conversations about the challenges on the Kuskokwim, and I will continue to work with the Commissioner on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Representative Craig Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Preceding you was Norm Van Vactor and Robin Samuelson talking about their, paintings a vivid portrait of permit loss, especially in rural Alaska communities, namely Bristol Bay, but of course it's happening all around the state. And can you speak to your understanding and what you have seen in your time working for Aleutians Borough or spending time elsewhere around Alaska as far as permit loss, permits leaving rural communities, and moving elsewhere, permits leaving Alaska to go out of state entirely?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I spent some time with the gentleman to whom you just referred as well, and certainly understand the issue. And it's not just salmon permits, but we see access to Alaska's fisheries as a threat in a lot of different arenas, and the federal fisheries is one of them. But in terms of permit loss, we support efforts to reverse that trend. I know that there's at least some discussion about legislation that might be introduced that would direct some attention to that and maybe end up with some solutions to it. But I know that there are some legal challenges and some other challenges, but that shouldn't dissuade us from aggressively pursuing that cause. And opportunity and access to the fishery resources by people who live in Alaska's fishing communities is extremely important. It's a priority for the department.
Excuse me, just one moment while I acknowledge Representative Foster, who's just joined us. Thank you. Representative Foster, we're just having our conversation with Commissioner Designee. If you have any questions for him, please interrupt and let us know. Anyone else? Well, I'm going to mention the, what is it, what do they call it, the red herring in the room or whatever they call it, about the bycatch issue. I know that's really a huge, significant issue, and give us your words of wisdom.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, the bycatch issue is a multifaceted issue, and the primary bycatch species that we find ourselves facing deal with halibut and Chinook salmon. Now, other salmon are also bycatch targets in the Bering Sea, chum salmon. But one of the concerns there is if you try to pull the fleets away from the chum salmon, you might end up directing them toward the Chinook salmon. So you have to make some choices. But the council is at least doing their best to reduce bycatch to the extent practicable for both species in the Bering Sea. At our next meeting in April for the Bering Sea, we're going to address a reduction of the bycatch limits for the pollock fishery, primarily in the Bering Sea. Chinook salmon numbers are low, and so we've determined that at times of low abundance like this that the bycatch caps should be lower as well. So it's our intention next month at the council meeting to bring those caps down significantly during these times of low abundance. The halibut bycatch in the Bering Sea has also been a major concern just because of the fact that over the last several years the halibut numbers are down, and the So the directed fishermen, the people who live in St. Paul or other Alaskan fishermen that fish in the Bering Sea for halibut, their quotas have gone down significantly, while the halibut available as bycatch to the folks who fish for bottom fish like yellowfin sole and rock sole, they've been pretty stable. So, you know, these are federal fisheries, so we're guided by national standards that suggest that we should allow for optimum yield. In other words, whatever the biologists say we can harvest, we should try to achieve that, while at the same time reducing bycatch to the extent practicable. So it's a balance, but we feel, at least recently, that it's been out of balance when for example, the St. Paul fishermen are told that we're sorry there's little or no fish left for you because they were all used for bycatch for the trawl fleets. And so we didn't agree with that, and we're addressing that in June. So that's and we're going to get, we've already gotten complaints from the trawl industry that we're taking money away from them, and they don't like it. So that's,
I imagine not. and neither did the St. Paul fishermen, I presume, when you told them there was no halibut for them, or when they were told there was no halibut. But
so with the Chinook salmon in the Bering Sea, it's with the pollock fishery, and with the halibut, it's with the groundfish fisheries, like I'd mentioned, the flats. In the Gulf of Alaska, the same situation. You've got the midwater of the pollock fleet will be the ones that catch the most Chinook salmon, and we have limits there. Finally, we didn't until just recently. There were a couple of big events in the Western Gulf that caused everybody to realize it had to have limits, and so they're in place now. There's two different sets of limits, one for the pollock fishery, which is 25,000 fish, which is divided east-west, about two-thirds, one-third, and then the non-pollock fishery is a much smaller number, and that's divided amongst gear groups. But and then, as you well aware, Madam Chairman, this year there was some concern that those limits might be reached or dangerously close to being reached. But I think we ended up in okay shape there, but it remains to be seen. But one big difference in the Gulf and the Bering Sea is that in the Bering Sea, the Chinook salmon that are harvested as bycatch are primarily Western Alaska fish. They're headed for the Yukon, the Kuskokwim, the Nushagak, the Unalakleet, you know, some of the rivers that have a very high subsistence dependence. And whereas in the Gulf, the genetic work that we've seen so far suggests that most of the Chinook salmon harvested in the Gulf are not Alaska fish, and so but we're still required to reduce bycatch as much as we can, in spite of the fact that they aren't necessarily fish that were hatched or, you know, spawned in Alaska. But there's still a lot of people that want those fish, so we can't completely ignore it. And in the Gulf, with halibut, is another. We've recently reduced the bycatch limits on the halibut, and part of the industry that needs to be able to take bycatch to harvest their target species have petitioned for a new management plan that would include allowing those fishermen to enter into co-ops, and they would also like to have permanent ownership of the fishing rights. And this administration isn't convinced that we need to assign those privileges in order to accomplish the bycatch reduction goals.
Oh, interesting. Thank you. Any further questions? Well, if there's no further questions, we really appreciate you coming in for this. Can I have a motion to approve Mr. Cotton as the commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Please.
I move that the Fisheries Committee approve the nomination of Mr. Cotton and put forward his name to the full body of the Alaska State House.
Thank you. With that, Commissioner-designee Cotton is approved by the House Fisheries Committee, and his resume will be submitted to the joint session. Our next meeting, thank you, Mr. Cotton. We appreciate you coming in. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 19th at 10 a.m. in this room. We will be hearing House Bill 112, Repeal CFEC, Transfer Functions to Alaska Department of Fish and Game. As there is no further business to come before this committee, We will adjourn at 10:42.